splashed with anger before she answered me. "We almost starved, you know," she hissed. "There was nothing. We were forgotten, abandoned by everyone. And then he came and offered us salvation."
"He?"
I asked. But Aunt Farah seemed distracted now. "We had nothing to lose. So we followed him away from here, to a new life." Her eyes had taken on a faraway sheen as she spoke with zealous pride. "Who did you follow?" I was treading lightly. She sounded like she might have gone sun mad. "The man in the mountain, of course." Suddenly, I was standing in Bilal's rooms again, holding the page from his book, staring down at the figure chained inside the rocks. "There's no such thing as just a story," I told him then. "He was sent to help us in our time of need." Aunt Farah smiled nastily at my shocked reaction, pleased to be the one to catch me off guard this time. "But he protects only the good. Any who come to him who are deemed unworthy." She trailed off tauntingly. Bilal had sent soldiers to find him, this man below the mountain. Soldiers who never came back. "He's not made of flesh and blood like you and me. He's made of fire, and he burns the unworthy." A man made of fire wasn't a man. He was a genie. The beginnings of an idea started to form. I had seen what Jean could do. If there really was one in the mountains, it was such a tempting notion. Facing Ashra's wall alone, we didn't stand a chance. But fighting the legendary with the legendary, fire with genie fire, well, that was an idea. "Can you take me to him?" I asked her. "Your savior in the mountain?" My aunt's expression was far too knowing and cruel. "I can," she said. "But let me warn you, blue-eyed bandit." She fired the name back at me. "You have no idea who you're facing. He knows your heart, and you will burn for each of your sins." "Well," I heard Sam say behind her, making my aunt whirl, unsettling her vitriolic composure. He was standing in the doorway, Jin next to him. I wondered how long they'd been witness to our conversation.
"This sounds like a terrible idea, given how many sins I have." "We should get going then," Jin said, clapping Sam on the back jovially. "You can count them on the way."
Tamid was the only one of us who wasn't apprehensive, following my aunt out of the ruins of Dustwalk into the mountains. He had a family we were going to find. He had reason to be excited. I had a family, too. I just didn't want to see them again. Aunt Farah was already enough. But still, the thought of the man in the mountain kept me putting one foot in front of the other, when all I really wanted was to turn back around. I realized where Aunt Farah was leading us a few paces before anyone else did. It was close to dusk, and we were deep in the mountains. I'd been on this road once before, with Jin, fleeing on the back of a Buraki from the chaos in Dustwalk. I could almost taste the iron from the mines in the air as we wound our way up the slope, getting closer, until finally, in the last of the light, we crested over a steep rise, and Sazi came into view. The ancient mountain mining town. Or at least it had been mines before my brother, Noorsham, burned them down using his power. But this Sazi was nothing like the town I remembered. Last time we were here, Sazi had been a desperate collection of ramshackle houses clinging to the skin of the mountain. But those were gone now, as if they'd been decimated by thousands of years, though it had only been 1 year. On the outskirts, we passed a lone building that hadn't completely been destroyed. One wall still stood, a colorful sign swinging above the door. The Drunk Genie. The same bar where I'd left Jin unconscious on a table before making a run for it. Now, instead of booze-stained bar tables, in the shadow of the single remaining wall was a bright canopy, using the wall as support. Aunt Farah stopped walking abruptly.
There are no weapons allowed beyond this point.
Immediately, the twins held up their hands.
Don't look at us. Or me.
Tamid was breathing hard from the walk up the mountain, but he had refused my help over and over until I'd stopped offering it. That left the three of us. Reluctantly, I unbuckled my holster. The boys followed suit. Sam gave his guns a quick, showy, and totally impractical twirl around his fingers before offering them to Aunt Farah. Jin and I handed over our knives and guns, too.
Is that everything?
Aunt Farah demanded as she leaned them gingerly against the wall. I could see stacks of weapons under the canopy now. Guns and bombs and swords and knives. A whole arsenal stored in the crumbled building.
He will know if you've kept anything hidden.
It wasn't everything. I'd seen Jin hold back one of his pistols, tucking it into his belt before pulling his shirt over it. I fiddled with the spare bullet I'd kept in my pocket. Between the two of us, we had a working weapon.
I'm all out of knives and guns.
It was the closest to an honest answer I could give, but it seemed to satisfy her.
Aunt Farah?
I asked as she started walking again.
What is this place?
We saw the error of our ways.
Aunt Farah's hands were folded in her calotte. Her hard demeanor had suddenly changed as we passed some invisible barrier into the camp, her head bowing like she was going to prayers.
We were arrogant to try to claim this world for our own by building houses in the sands when we are meant to roam it.
Sure enough, as we pressed deeper into what was left of Sazi, there were hundreds of tents, a riot of colors dotting the otherwise bleak mountain landscape. And among them were hundreds of people, more than all of Dustwalk, Deadshot, and Sazi put together. Men and women crowded between tents and small fires, laughing and talking. Clusters of women sat together sewing a patch in a torn tent canvas. A group of men seemed to be carving things out of wood. It reminded me of the camp we'd lost, a sanctuary hidden from the world. Two children dashed past us, screaming with laughter. And to my surprise, I recognized one of them.
Nasima!
I called out my little cousin's name without thinking. She skidded to a stop, dark braids swinging in an arc, whipping her back. She stared at me blankly, warily, like I was a stranger.
It's me!
I pressed my hand to my chest, like I might when talking to a foreigner. Only she was my blood.
Amani, your cousin. Don't you remember me?
No, you're not.
Nasima took a bold step toward me in challenge.
Amani is dead. My mama said so.
Then she retreated.
Are you a skinwalker?
She asked.
That's what my mama says about people who pretend they're other people.
I started to tell her that if I were a skinwalker, it would take more than a shima to protect me from the sun. But she wasn't listening.
Skinwalker!
Nasima called out, turning and running away from me. People looked up at us as she bolted. On instinct, Jin moved between me and the staring eyes. Only there were no guns pointing our way, no knives being drawn. They were as unarmed as we were. defenseless. Then we heard it through the crowd. Tamid? The voice made me stand up straight. It was a voice I was used to being scolded by, for always being around, for corrupting her son. Tamid's mother pushed her way toward us, and my heart faltered a little. The last time I'd seen her had been from the back of a Buraki, behind Jin, as we'd fled blood and chaos, and she tried to crawl her way toward her son, who was lying bleeding in the sand with a bullet through his knee, thanks to me. Just before he'd been taken prisoner and brought to the city along with Shira. Now, as she moved toward her son, her face was full of tentative, uncertain hope. Mother! Tamid limped toward her, and the hope broke into joy. She rushed to him, moving faster than he could on his false leg. She was crying before she even reached him, clasping him in her arms like he was still a little boy. I caught a few words between her sobs as she clung to him. What happened to you? What did they do to you? And then, you're alive. You're alive. Over and over again. I realized I'd been holding myself like there was an iron rod in my back, waiting for the reproach that was coming my way for what I'd done to her son. But it never came. She didn't even see me. She didn't care that he'd been taken away, just that he'd been brought back. Father? Tamid asked, pulling away, looking around, though less hopeful. His mother shook her head. He didn't... She hesitated. He was deemed unworthy. He saw what your father did to you. Tamid winced. When Tamid was born with a crooked leg, his father had wanted to kill him. Tamid's mother had saved her son. He burned for it. Neither Tamid nor his mother looked particularly sorry about it. I couldn't say I blamed them. I wondered who else had been judged too sinful by this man in the mountain. I looked over at my aunt. There was pain scrawled on her face. Two people had been taken from Dustwalk the day I disappeared with Jin. Only one of them would ever come back. Aunt Farah would never be reunited with Shira this way. Aunt Farah, I tried again. Your grandson. In the city. Shira named him.
What is she doing here?
The belligerent voice cut me off. I knew it instantly. You have got to be kidding me. So my reckoning with my past wouldn't come from Tamid's mother after all. I turned around and faced Fazim Al-Motem. If we really were being judged for our sins, then I didn't have to worry, not if Fazim was still alive. Fazim had claimed he was in love with Shira until he tried to threaten me into marrying him so he wouldn't tell everyone I was the blue-eyed bandit. All because he wanted the money I'd get for capturing a Buraki. If that wasn't a sin, I didn't know what was. And yet here he was, strutting toward me.
Pretty bold for a criminal to show her face here, Fazim crowed.
He looked shorter than I remembered. I vaguely wondered if I'd gotten taller.
Stealing from your own family.
Leave it, boy.
Another voice spoke. It was my uncle, I realized. I scarcely would have recognized him if my cousin Nasima hadn't been clutching his hand, still eyeing me warily. He was wearing rags instead of the fine clothes of a horse merchant, and his hair and beard had grown long. But Fazim took another swaggering step, full of false confidence, as he crossed the rocky terrain to confront me.
Do you think he really can't see that this is a mistake?
Jin said below his breath,
so only I could hear him?
Maybe he just hasn't noticed we outnumber him, Sam suggested from my other side.
He was regarding Fazim curiously, like he was a harmless oddity in our way. Fazim wasn't exactly harmless, but they were right. We could do him a lot more harm than he could do me now.
What did you do to him anyway, Imani? Break his heart?
Not exactly.
I'd been afraid of him once, too. Just like I'd been afraid of Aunt Farah. But in the shadow of the Sultan, the monsters of my childhood seemed ridiculous now.
Well, Imani.
Fazim was very close to me. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Jin's hand make a fist. I wasn't going to let it get far enough for that.
What do you have to say for...
I flicked my hand at the sand below his feet, between the stones of the mountain, upsetting his footing. A trick I'd picked up off the Albish and Ilyaz. The stab of pain through my stomach was gone as quickly as it came, and as Fazim toppled over, landing flat on his back, it was entirely worth it. Fazim cursed violently as he sat back up, looking embarrassed as some laughed. A few people edged forward, not entirely sure of themselves. After all, I hadn't laid a hand on Fazim. But we might be in for a fight all the same. But then a cry came from the back.
He's coming! Make way! He's coming!
The crowd split like a knife slicing cloth, clearing a straight path through the camp. Fazim scrambled out of the way and got to his feet, suddenly looking cowed. I turned, heart pounding, waiting to see this he. The man in the mountain. The real monster of my childhood stories. The genie who had been chained up by his own brethren. The creature who burned people he deemed unworthy of being saved. And there, standing at the other side of the camp, his hands raised either in blessing or in warning, was my Demji brother, Norsham.
Chapter 20. For a second, our eyes locked across the rocky terrain. Surprise as clear on his face as it must have been on mine. I felt Jin reach on instinct for the gun he hadn't given away. My hand dashed to his, lacing our fingers together, drawing him away from his weapon carefully. "Don't," I willed him silently. Norsham started to move toward us. He had flattened whole cities. He had burned people from the inside out. It didn't cost him anything to do it. One wrong move from us, and there was no telling what would happen. But I'd stood across from him before, when he'd refused to hurt me. I'd been there when Jin hadn't. And he was my brother, after all. He wouldn't harm me. I had to believe that. As Norsham passed through the crowd slowly, everyone around him bent like blades of grass under a strong wind.
"You kneel," my aunt hissed, loud enough that it was meant to shame me.
She was enjoying this, I realized. But I ignored her. Instead, I took a step to meet him. My aunt sucked in a breath. I knew she was thinking it would be the end of me. She was thinking I didn't know what Norsham could do. But I knew better than anyone. I unlaced my hand from Jin's as I pulled away from him, crossing the path that had formed between the people of the camp and my brother, until we were only a few steps apart. He looked different from when I had last seen him. His hair had grown out from the shorn cut that had been under the bronze helmet the Sultan had forced on him. And there was a small scar on his chin. He reached out a hand toward me. For just a second, even in rags instead of metal armor, he looked exactly as he had the moment before he burned Bahi alive, blazing with power and righteousness. He'd burned whole cities with that hand. And then he clasped my face,
and his palms were only as warm as flesh and blood, not immortal fire.
Amani.
Noorsham's smile could have lit up the world.
You found your way home to me, sister.
And he embraced me.
I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy the stunned look on Aunt Farah's face just a little bit.
The Eye!
Someone called from the crowd behind Noorsham.
How can we trust them without looking at the Eye?
We all had to go through the Eye, another person called, sounding angry.
The Eye!
Someone else called from far off.
The Eye!
It was picked up like a chant among the assembled people.
The Eye, the Eye, the Eye.
Soon everyone was chanting it.
The Eye, the Eye, the Eye.
Noorsham turned in a slow circle. The words of the chant seemed to shake the mountain around us as he surveyed his people. Finally, Noorsham moved, raising one hand ever so slightly in the air. It was as if he had flicked a switch. The whole of the mountain fell silent at his command. Everyone waited with bated breath for him to speak.
"To the Eye, then,"
he declared. An uproarious cheer swelled from the mountain. Suddenly, everyone was moving at once, encircling us, pushing us forward like we were dust caught in a powerful current. I felt fingernails sink hard into my arm. It was Aunt Farah, gripping me like she was my jailer, driving me forward, making sure I wouldn't get away from whatever this Eye was. We didn't have to go far. Noorsham led us to a small indent in the mountain, where the ground sloped off. It was surrounded by prayer scarves, making it brighter than desert ground ought to be. And the slope was strewn with bright cloths and dried flowers, the kind I'd seen in the Sultan's gardens, but that never grew here on the mountain. And in the middle of it all was a small, jagged-looking piece of mirror, a shard roughly the shape of an eye. Everyone stopped at the edge of the slope, circling around to watch, but no one passed the line of prayer flags that marked the edge, except for Noorsham, who descended confidently. He picked up the shard of glass reverently in his palms, lifting it high so that it caught the late afternoon sun. The shard flashed blue, and I heard Jin suck in a breath next to me. I glanced at him curiously.
"That looks like a Nakhsin,"
he said in a low voice.
"A what?"
That didn't sound like any language I had heard him speak.
"A Gammonic's invention."
Like the paired compasses, or Layla's horde of abominations. A synergy of machine and magic.
"You can use them to read things in the eyes of others. Armies use them to interrogate spies."
Noorsham's blue eyes, so much like mine, turned to catch me.
"Which one among you will come and face the Eye, so I may see the truth of your intentions?"
We traded quick glances. One of us had to spill all our secrets for the lives of everyone else. I ought to send down one of the twins. They were more innocent than Jin or I was. But I could see the naked fear on their faces, and I could feel Noorsham's gaze boring into the back of my neck. I had volunteered to lead the rebellion. I should take responsibility.
"I will."
I turned back to Noorsham. I stepped between two of the prayer flags, crossing over the invisible border and descending to stand across from my brother. Up close, I could see the Eye better. It was obviously magic, as Jin had said. At the edge of the shard of mirror's jagged outline, there was something like a crackle of energy, like the spark that fed Layla's machines.
"Where did you get this?"
I asked my brother, keeping a safe distance from the object in his hands.
You're not the only one to come here looking for something.
Noor Sham said vaguely.
At first I had to guess what was in their souls. But then foreign soldiers came, and they brought this with them. A gift from God delivered to me by their hands. I use it to see who is truly looking for sanctuary, and who seeks something else. And I decide if they stay, or if they burn.
A chill went through me at those words. I thought of the men Bilal had sent south, looking for the powerful creature below the mountain, who could grant his wish to cheat death. Sure enough, half a dozen of the prayer cloths encircling us now looked like strips taken from the uniforms from the Ilyas command. Be good, or the monster in the mountain will get you. Noor Sham extended the shard of the Nakhsin toward me.
Look into the eye, Amani. Let it see you.
From the crowd above us, a rhythmic noise started to pick up. Hands pounding against the mountain rock. Just a few at first, and then gradually more, picking up the cadence.
"I," someone chanted, more quietly this time, as their hands slapped the ground like a drumbeat. "I, I, I."
And soon the chant had spread again, everyone speaking softly, but their voices mingling together into a loud rhythm along with the beating of their hands. We were surrounded. I had walked us all into a trap with a ticking bomb. One I had to defuse now, or we all died. If Noor Sham saw everything that I had done, I didn't know that I would be seen as being sinless. But also, I didn't see that I had any choice in bearing my soul to him either. I did as I was told. I looked down into the glass. It was as if a tumble of images fell out of my mind onto the surface of the mirror, and I was watching them all play in quick succession. Shifting desert sands and walls of fire. Execution after execution. Death after death. Jean trapped under the palace. The Sultan at gunpoint. And then one final glaring image. The thing we were really here for. The man in the mountain. I tore my head up, breathing hard. It felt like coming up for air underneath the whitefish, except it was as if my mind was what needed to breathe. Jin was next to me, even though I didn't see where he came from, steadying me with strong arms around my middle. I leaned against him gratefully, as Noor Sham carefully held the shard of mirror in his hands, inspecting the contents of my mind in it for a very long moment.
If we need to run, Jin said, low in my ear.
You dodge left, I go right. Split them up, I agreed. It was the only chance we might have of getting out of here in one piece. Taking his sweet time, Noor Sham placed the eye back on the makeshift altar before turning to the crowd. I caught Iz's gaze. He gave me a slight nod, saying he understood. If we bolted, he and Maz were ready to shift into something that could outfly the people of Sazi.
I have seen her sins.
My brother finally spoke.
I have passed judgment.
He spread his arms as he faced his disciples, all of them hanging on his every word, leaning forward with wide, zealous eyes.
They do not need to burn,
he declared loudly. And suddenly the crowd was screaming again, this time with joy. Though the funny thing was, I didn't find it any less unsettling than when they were baying for my blood. Chapter 21. I was keenly aware of the stars watching me as I turned over in my bedroll. I hadn't bothered to pitch one of our tents. It was warm enough this far south, even at night. Most of Noor Sham's people slept out in the open air. After all, what do they have to hide from the eyes of God? Only for me, it wasn't the eyes of God I was worried about, but the eyes of the other women asleep around me. Unmarried men and women were separated, according to Noorsham's rules.
It's a sin for that boy to even look at you the way he does, if you're not wedded to him.
One of the disciples hissed below her breath, casting a glance over her shoulder at Jin, who was watching me as they led me away to an area of Sazi that sat below a shallow dip of the rocks, just below where the mines used to be. That was where the women slept. I caught sight of my cousin Olia settling herself in under the last of the light. She caught my gaze and just shrugged, as if to ask me if I'd really expected anything to change in the last county. I supposed I was the only thing that had, really. I wanted to talk to Jin. I needed to talk to someone now we'd reached this forsaken dead end to a hunt for some impossible story. We'd lost another day of searching, thanks to me. Used to be I'd go looking for Shazad in the long, dark nights full of doubt. But she was gone, and I was stuck, separated from the boys. And I wouldn't put it past one of these women to sell me out if I snuck off in the dead of night. I'd seen it happen already once today. After evening prayers, where the entire camp had gathered around Noorsham to be blessed by the same hands he'd used to burn people alive. Then his disciples had lined up in front of him eagerly. We looked on curiously from the side as two of his disciples appeared, hauling two huge sacks that they set down next to him. I watched as he reached inside the first and pulled out a loaf of fresh-looking bread and handed it to the first person. They moved aside quickly. I didn't realize how hungry I was until we saw the food. The next person shuffled along. The man after him got another identical loaf. A little girl stepped up next, hands extended eagerly. But before Noorsham could feed her, the woman behind her spoke up loudly.
She wasn't at prayers today.
Noorsham drew away from the little girl as sharply as if she were a snake.
Mira, is this true?
It sounded more like an accusation than a question. The little girl went silent.
Tell me the truth, Mira,
he was saying.
I'll know if you lie.
I lost track of the sun, she admitted finally.
As he raised his hand toward her, I was suddenly worried I was about to see the little girl burn alive. I started to draw forward, and I could feel Jin shifting next to me, too. Neither of us sure what we were going to do. But he only rested a hand on her cheek.
If you want to eat in the morning, you will join us at worship instead of playing in the mountains.
The girl was pushed out of the line without food. Noorsham saw me watching him. I'd taken a step forward without realizing it. He reached into the bag and held out his closed hands toward me. I didn't move straight away, but Noorsham didn't move on. Didn't turn back to the woman who had sold out young Mira and was shifting restlessly, waiting to reclaim her leader's attention. Finally, I extended my hands toward my brother, and he dropped an orange in my palms. I stared at it, disbelieving, even as Norsham's attention shifted back to the disciples in his line. I hadn't seen a fresh orange for the first 16 years of my life. Not until I got to the rebel camp, far from this dusty, dead-earthed part of the desert where nothing could grow. Fruit around these parts came stewed in cans so that it could survive the long desert journey to us. It was impossible that I was holding a fresh orange. Except it was real. When I peeled it, the rind caked under my fingernails, and the intoxicating smell of fresh citrus filled the dusty desert air. And there was no mistaking the burst of sweet flavor when I ate it. It was unsettling,
out of place. The whole thing, this whole camp, it worried me in a way I couldn't wholly put my finger on. I turned over restlessly in my bedroll. I hated being alone with my thoughts. They churned through my head like a desert storm, dust scattering every which way, too quick to catch. I needed to talk to Jin. I didn't care that it was against whatever rules they seemed to have here. I slipped out of my bedroll as quietly as I could, casting around to make sure there were no wakeful eyes watching me sneak out as I wove my way through the rest of the bodies of sleeping women. I was almost out when a flicker of light above us caught my eye. I stopped, ducking quickly so I was low to the ground, too low for the light to find me among the rocks and sleeping bodies. And I waited for whatever nighttime patrol this was to pass. A few moments later, Norsham appeared above me on the slope. He was moving through the dark by a dim light emanating from his hands, a dulled version of his destructive power. He was walking a few paces above me. I hesitated. Of all the people to get caught by, Norsham would be the worst, that was for damn sure. I had to go back, lie down, close my eyes and pretend to be asleep until dawn, and then we could all leave in the morning with no one getting turned to ashes. But I already knew I wasn't fooling myself, pretending I might do the smart thing for once in my life. I waited a few heartbeats until he was a safe distance ahead of me, and then I moved to follow Norsham. He led me past the edge of his makeshift civilization to where the ground started to slope upward above the camp. I moved as gingerly as I could, careful to stay far out of the circle of light cast by his hands, trying to remember where to step on the uneven ground by watching the light ahead of me as we climbed further and further up the mountain slope. Until finally, we reached the entrance to the mines. Norsham pressed forward without hesitating, entering the dark mouth of the mountains, his hands spilling a sea of light across the rough stone walls. I hesitated where I was crouched, just below him on the slope, moving on all fours to avoid sliding rocks that would give me away. If I entered that tunnel, there was nowhere to hide. But I'd come this far. I moved up the last few feet to the entrance, following him into the mountain. Ahead of me, Norsham moved with the confidence of someone who had taken this route 1,000 times before. When the path forked, he took the left tunnel without hesitation. He passed the debris abandoned by miners, without so much as glancing down. He did not slow when we wove through places where the mountain had collapsed into hideous charred and melted rock, a result of the moment he had unleashed his power inside this mountain, killing most of the people in it. We were deep into the old mines when he turned right and walked through what looked like a solid wall. I stopped sharply behind him as he vanished, then quickly rushed forward, already afraid of losing him. As I got closer, I realized it wasn't solid rock. It was a tiny side passage in the mountain, so much narrower than the tunnels made by man. I likely would have mistaken it for a fissure in the rocks if I was walking by. The light of Norsham's hands was still just leaking out around my feet. If I waited any longer, I would lose it. I would be left alone in the dark. I plunged after him. It wasn't a long tunnel. I maybe walked 12 paces when it ended suddenly. I staggered to an abrupt stop as the narrow tunnel opened into a huge cave. Norsham was ahead of me, moving deeper into the cavern. In the light cast by his hands, I could see a perfectly formed domed ceiling above us and smooth, even walls. We were deep into the mountain now. I could feel the weight of it pressing in all around us, as if the stone was trying to reclaim this chamber. Like it knew the cave was out of place, hadn't been formed by nature. But I could tell it wasn't made by human hands either. Not something this size, this perfectly made. In the center of the cave sat a huge stone chest, large enough to fit a person. I ran my hand along the narrow fissure of the entrance. There was no way something that size came through this gap. As Norsham approached it, I saw that there was no break between the chest's sides and the floor of the cave. The chest was carved out of the mountain itself, like the whole cavern had been hollowed out around it. The light danced across its uneven surface, casting into relief the images that adorned the side. Elegantly twisting vines were chiseled into the stone, hanging heavy with etched figs and dates and grapes and oranges and pomegranates and dozens of other fruits I'd never seen in the desert. Some I didn't even recognize now. There were scrapes of color, too, as if the carved fruits had been brightly painted once upon a time. And then Norsham's hands dashed light across the far wall of the cave, and I forgot all about the stone chest. The sight was gone as quickly as it had come, plunged back into darkness as my brother dropped to his knees, prostrating himself in prayer, pressing his hands into the ground so that the only lights left in the cave were two glowing embers trapped between his palms and the stone ground. I could see his lips moving in silent supplication, his features seeming to melt into the gloom as he raised his head slowly. Then, as he raised his hands, the wall came into view again, 1 inch at a time, like the dawn revealing the landscape hidden by the night. And I knew I hadn't been hallucinating. The wall was every color we never saw in the last county, painted in intricate patterns. It was as bright as the Sultan's gardens, decorated with scenes of a great battle, of the destroyer of worlds emerging from Aramot, of the first hero being made by the hands of the Djinn, of beasts never seen in the desert or the mountains. The wall looked like a twin to the one that led into our lost sanctuary in Dev's Valley. And just like at the rebel camp, in the middle of it all, under a long string of words in the first language, crowning it like an arch, was a painted door. Our door had led into the rebel camp, a valley abandoned by a genie and claimed as our home. Where did this one lead?
I've come here to pray about what to do about you, you know.
Norsham's voice in the silence made me jump. He wasn't looking at me, but he must have seen me. There was no point hiding. I stepped fully into the cave, moving toward the light. What is this place? I asked. Norsham shifted so that he was facing me, sitting cross-legged on the floor, palms turned upward.
I thought I was dead when the mountain fell on me,
Norsham said. He meant when he had first discovered his power, and the mines had collapsed around him in the fire he made.
Even though it hadn't crushed me, I was sure I would starve or suffocate down here in the dark, and then wandering, fleeing the fire and the death that I didn't yet understand, I found this.
He rested one hand against the huge chest in the middle of the room, though he never took his gaze off me, his eyes more unsettling now that we were alone than they had been out in Sazi.
What do you most crave to eat at this very moment, sister?
I didn't answer, but all the same, an image of a peach came into my mind. I wasn't sure why. They had been in abundance at the palace. We could pick them straight off the trees in the harem. Norsham pushed against the lid of the chest. It slid free with a teeth-grinding screech of stone against stone. It was filled with peaches. Hundreds of them. They were as fresh as if displayed at a market stall in Isman, as if they'd just been picked. And yet they were under a mountain, far from any peach tree. I moved forward next to my brother and picked one up hesitantly. I was half expecting an illusion, but the flesh was soft and downy, and when I took a bite, juice dribbled down my hands. It tasted like another world, not of this dusty desert mountain, but of far-off gardens and brighter days. If it was an illusion, it was a damn good one. It seemed more like magic. Not the kind that the Gammonex invented, but the kind that came from creatures more powerful than us, left over from stories and legends and great and terrible times. Real magic. That was how he was feeding his hungry disciples. Norsham watched me as I devoured the peach, right down to the stone in the middle.
"I know why you're really here, you know,"
he said calmly.
"You came looking for war and destruction. I saw it in the eye. And yet I deceived my people for your sake."
"You know that eye of yours isn't some God-sent tool, don't you?" I picked my words carefully. I was on unsteady ground here. "It's an invention, and you killed the people who brought it here." Norsham just smiled placidly back at that, like he felt sorry for me being so naive. "How many more people have you killed because of that thing, Norsham?"
"Only those I needed to, in order to protect my people."
If he felt any remorse for what he'd done, it didn't show.
"I am meant to do something great in this life, Amani."
From another man, that might sound like pretension. But the way Norsham said it, it was just certainty. And he was a Demji. He couldn't lie.
"My mother always said so,"
Norsham said simply.
"She had been promised it."
By our father, I realized. Shira had told me in the palace prison that Farishte had granted her a gift for their son, an untainted wish freely given so that it wouldn't turn against her as most did in the stories. Shira, trapped in an endless cycle of political machinations, had wished that her son would be Sultan one day. Hala's mother, poor and greedy, had wished for gold. And Norsham's mother, caught in a small life in a small mountain town, had wished for greatness for her son. I wondered, not for the first time, what my mother had wished. For me to get the hell out of Dustwalk, since she never could? For me to know a bigger world? I glanced down at the peach stone in my hand. I doubted even she could have anticipated that the world was this big.
"When the mountain fell on me,"
Norsham went on,
"after I was given my gift, I thought I might die before I could fulfill my destiny. And then I was rescued. I was told that I was indeed destined to do great things."
He had a faraway look in his eyes.
"I thought first it was to drive the foreigners out of our desert. But then I failed. And I came back here, back home. I found this desert dying. Deadshot was tearing itself apart. Dustwalk was starving. Zazi was despairing. And I understood. It was my duty to save them. I must save as many of our people as I had killed."
That would be a whole lot of people. He had flattened Asama, an oasis city in the northern desert. He had burned men from Zazi alive in the same mines we were in now. Bahi, Bilal's men. "You're still killing people," I said.
"Only the ones who come to me with harm in their hearts."
Norsham didn't blink.
Ones like you. Ashra's wall is a sacred barrier, you know.
So he had seen that in the eye, too. Damn. I know, I said. And I did. More than anyone, I understood what stories could mean when they were true. But there are people on the other side. I need to get them out, Norsham. I can't leave them there.
Ashra's wall is...
I know, I know!
I raised my voice without meaning to.
But Norsham, this country is being ripped apart. You have only seen some of it. That's why the last county was in trouble. That's why you had to save them. And there are people on the other side of that wall who can save a whole lot more people than this, who could change the whole country for good.
Norsham looked unmoved. I believe that if God had wanted them to save people, he would have given them a gift like mine.
We are not gifted by God, I snapped, the truth boiling over onto my lips. You and I, we're not chosen for anything. We're just born like everyone else, all of us. We're just a side effect of immortals not being able to resist mortal women. And these so-called gifts they give us are just powers that are bound to tear us up or get us killed before we get old enough to do anything at all, great or terrible. I felt the tears start, even though I didn't know if they were anger or bitterness or grief. Ashra was probably a Demji, just like us, who died in a war she shouldn't have been fighting. Princess Hawa was, too. I was breathing hard. She was also our sister. Did you know that? And she died doing something great. And Hala died, and Emin died. And if Tamid is right, I might be dead soon, too. And I'm not going to let all of that be for nothing. I have to save them. Norsham embraced me unexpectedly, cutting off my tirade of tears as he pressed me to his chest.
I'm sorry, sister, he said close to my ear. I see your pain.
He drew away and clasped my tear-stained face with his hands.
But I cannot let you release the destroyer of worlds.
His hands were pleasantly warm at first, then hot, too hot. And I knew he had made the decision to protect his people over saving mine. It was the choice I would have made, too. I couldn't begrudge him that. His hands were scalding now. I shifted, just barely, dropping the peach pit I had been clutching. My hand slipped into my pocket. I found the single bullet I had saved when we'd handed over our weapons. It was seemingly useless without a gun, unless you knew what we really were. We weren't chosen by God. We were children of immortal beings, vulnerable to iron just like they were. I knew that, even if my brother didn't. I clasped my hand over Norsham's, pressing the bullet to his skin. Immediately, the heat in his hands vanished. He blinked in confusion as he felt his gift leave him. His blue eyes met mine, looking for answers. I'm so sorry, Norsham, I said. And then I punched him in the face. Chapter 22.
This was your plan all along, wasn't it?
Sam had his arms wrapped around me, pressing me to his chest so I couldn't escape him talking.
Lure me down to the dead end of nowhere with promises of heroic deeds, all just to get close to me.
That's an awfully convoluted plan. I was trying to find a comfortable place to settle my arms that wasn't his shoulders. but there really weren't very many options. If I was going to take advantage of you, I could have done it back in the harem. We were standing together, chest to chest, trying our hardest to choke out any air between us. It might have looked romantic if it weren't for Jin looping a rope around us, securing us like we were some ship's anchor about to be pushed overboard. My brother was in the corner, unconscious and bound up in the shackles we'd taken off Sam after his brush with the firing squad. We needed to get this done before dawn came, and Norsham's disciples woke up and wondered where he was. They would find him and free him eventually, but I was planning on us being long gone by then. Tamid was fretting anxiously at the mouth of the tunnel. My one-time friend might have thought he was done with our rebellion when we got here, but he was the only person I trusted to drug my brother safely. And more than that, I'd needed him to read the words in the first language scrawled over the door.
"But isn't this so much more romantic?" Sam went on wistfully. "Braving near certain death with me."
The rope tightened so that I was pressed with my ear against his shoulder. I couldn't see his face, but I was sure he was laughing at me.
"Just like Sinbel and Sorsha, or Leofric and Elfleda."
"I have no idea who those people are," I said into his shirt.
"Albish love stories," he said. "You'd like Leofric and Elfleda. He's a thief. She's a powerful sorceress. They both die tragically at the end. That's what happens in all great love stories."
"Well, it's a good thing we're not in love then." Sam's flirting had gotten a whole lot less outrageous the farther south we'd gotten. Half of me thought it was because he and Jin were actually getting along. Better than I'd seen Jin get along with Ahmed in months, now I thought about it. Sam was only back to flirting with me now because he was trying to lighten the mood. We were about to walk through solid mountain into unknown territory. I'd made Tamid read the words carved above the doorway to me.
"They're in the first language," he had said,
furrowing his brow as he read them by torchlight.
"Something about a prisoner?"
We all felt that simple word settle over us as he said it. The man in the mountain. Monster or mortal, maybe. But definitely not just myth. Well, we'd come here looking for powerful help, and we might have found it.
"We'll need a name to open the door," Jin had said. "Like back in the Devs Valley."
He cut himself off before he said, "back home." But I heard it.
"There's no name."
Tamid squinted at the words above the doorway.
"But there is something else. I think it's..."
I saw the realization settle over him a moment before he said the next words, low and reverent.
"I think they're the words to free a genie."
There it was. The thing Tamid had been looking for in books. Our salvation. Not recorded on any paper in a northern library, but buried in the mountains here far in the south. It was an answer to what to expect beyond that door. Not a man. A genie. It didn't matter that we didn't have the right words to get the painted door to open for us. We had alternative ways in. Nobody asked who would be going through with Sam. Nobody needed to. Now, standing tied to Sam, I made Tamid read the words above the door out to me again. I repeated them back carefully.
"Good,"
he said, like a patient teacher. He really would have made a good holy father.
"And then at the end, you would say the genie's true name."
"I know," I cut him off. "I've called a genie before." Tamid looked away, shamefaced, that brief moment between us breaking, as I reminded him that he was at least partly responsible for the Jean currently imprisoned under the palace. Jin pulled on the knot, dragging Sam and me together a little tighter.